You know, when you go to somebody's house who's like very into anthropology or like has gone traveled the world and then just come home with like weird ass shit. It's like that kind of house, you know?
Yeah, because my parents have some masks that are I don't like at all in their house.
Yeah, because you're like, they're cursed. You're like, why did you bring these? They're from somebody's gravesite, probably. Like, parents, why did you bring this home?
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest
and offering up Horror Movie Survival Guide tips
to help you stay alive.
I hope you're ready to rock today. Terry, you ready to rock?
Oh my God, I'm so ready to rock, Julia. I'm like over the moon excited that we are in the midst of our lesbian vampire round, one of our favorite sub genres. I literally had a friend last night be like, is that a thing? And I was like, oh.
Hell yeah, it is.
It's a thing.
This is our second round, and I feel like we have barely scratched the surface of this subgenre.
Ooh, so to speak.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia, and this is...
Terry. What's up?
So this week, we are talking about 1971's The Shiver of the Vampires. Title of this episode is Your Bourgeois Vampires. And I got no tagline, sad to say. But this was written...
It doesn't really need it.
No, it doesn't. We'll get to that, but we can imagine the tagline, which is sometimes better than the actual one. Uh-huh. So this was written by Monique Nathan and Jean Rollin, who also directed the film. So straight out the gate, we got the grooviest credit music that I was like, I'm on board.
I knew it.
As soon as I heard it. Vampire's coming, and there's this music.
As soon as I heard it, I was like, I think Julia picked this one and I have a good reason why. This is like the most 70s groove-tastic. It's like slappy guitars. We got like pallbearers that look like the Beatles. I was like, this is all your shit, Julia.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking good. And I really love horror movies that take, especially ones that have like one band like this or like Goblin for Argento, where the soundtrack becomes such a bigger part of the film than just kind of like meddling strings. Like this is something that clearly they composed this for this film. And sometimes it doesn't quite fit and it's like too rocky. And I'm like, that's okay. I like it. You're too rocking right now, but I'm on board.
I kind of love it because it's like, I'm probably going to say this like 20 million times during this whole round of all these films, but it's like all vibes. Like each film is just giving you vibes. I was like, lesbian vampires want to vibe with you.
This is the thing. It's like, you know, something that we've noticed about this sub-genre is that it's also very art house, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of beautiful thing about it is like, you're not just getting kind of straight on lesbian vampires. You're getting it in a very beautiful and artistic way and very kind of experimental, which I really, really enjoy. And something that we've talked about before is that there's this unfair balance between women, homosexuals and men, homosexual vampires, which there's almost none, like, and certainly not at this kind of beautiful art house level. So we feel like this is an injustice that needs to be corrected.
My friends were like, the guys are basic. I was like, oh no, they can make something pretty. We need something pretty for you guys.
Yeah.
It's our mission. It's our mission.
We'll try to change that. So we got guys, it was stakes in their hearts. Right. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good right off the bat in a vampire movie, right in the cemetery. So we're like, all right, we're starting out where we should be starting out.
Yeah. And they're like, basically, we need to kill ourselves because we are these evil monsters now. And they have their like Renfields, basically their little hench ladies, carrying candelabras the whole movie. Can I just share this? You know how obsessed I am with a candle budget for a movie? Need to know for this one, the amount of candelabra.
And these two maids, which never get named. They're just the maids, the servants. This is Marie-Pierre Castel and Quilin Hersey, who are so stunning and are clearly, and this is sad to say, clearly just set dressing, but they're so beautiful that I'll watch them walk around in anything.
They're beautiful. And they're also like very short compared to the gentleman vampires. So like they look like
if they were on Apple
perspective.
Boxes?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was like a perspective thing, but then when they have the shot where they're standing behind them, like clearly and walking around them, I was like, no, these ladies are tiny, or are those guys just really tall? But they also seem almost as tall as the other vampire ladies later on in this movie. I don't know, but I love it.
I don't know. But and yeah. As far as Renfields go, these two might win, as like you get like two for the price of one, and they're stunning and they're naked all the time.
Wicked hot, see-through outfits, half of it. Like they just like gauzy, drapey, velvet. Like the costumes in this, I just gonna say already, I can just tell you all folks, they're gorgeous. If you have not seen this movie, big high recommends on this one, because just straight out the gate, it's cool, it's vibey, it's fun. You can throw this on with a friend, you know, and enjoy an evening because it is hot.
And most of these vampire movies that we have covered and will be covering are very drawn from Carmilla, the story mm-hmm. by Fanu. And so it's very interesting that this one kind of story, which isn't crazy lesbian, right? Because we're talking about a story that was written, you know, in a time where you're not going to do that. But it's spawned this entire subgenre. So who knows? Because here we have our honeymooning couple. You see them, they're doomed immediately. Like, oh, you're doomed. You poor
bastard. As soon as you see a girl in a white dress in a horror movie, you're going to be like, oh, eventually you're going to die or be covered in blood or something terrible is going to happen to you. So yes, 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 yes.
And
sacrificial lamb.
I'm sure you saw him and you also thought of me. Her fiance, her boy, husband, Antoine.
The groom.
Jean-Marie mm-hmm. Duran. Oh,
yeah, the
killing
groom.
Me.
He's
so
beautiful.
Hot, like giving me Jean-Pierre Léaud vibes so hard, and I wanted to like, and she keeps rebuffing him. I'm like, how can you do that? Oh my
she
God.
She does not want to consummate this marriage yet for whatever reason. Something is stopping her. So they are driving out to their honeymoon to go visit their cousins. This is like the caveat, right? And so
her cousins.
Yeah. So she's like, yes, my cousins, they have a castle. You're like, of course, this is so European. Her cousins have a castle. They're going there for their honeymoon, basically to go say hello. But they get there to the gate and there's a lady down the lane who basically tells them, the neighbor lady, she's like, oh no, they died yesterday. I'm so sorry. They were just buried. So she lets the groom know, and he's like, oh, he has to come back to the car and tell his bride as they're driving up this hill to go to the cousins that actually your cousins have died. I'm so sorry. This is our wedding day. This is the wrong circumstances. They show up. They apologize for what they're wearing when they get to the castle to the servants. Like, we didn't know. We literally just came here from our wedding to, you know, come talk with her cousins, and they're dead. And the people are like, actually, no, they're around. And they're like, wait, what? I don't know. So it seemed like they died and there was a whole funeral for them, but were they really dead?
Yeah. And she does meet Isabel, the woman in the town, Nicole Nansel at the tomb, who she's in her widow garb. She doesn't know that they're not dead. And she's like, oh, I was going to be their bride. And she's like, oh, to which one? She's like, both. Like, okay.
So French. She's just like, I was lovers to both. Okay. I would die for either one. They're so hot. I love them both.
Yeah.
And their dog would come to her window and, you know, come fetch her.
Oh, Anubis. That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
So she, our lead wants to not, yes, as Terry said, not consummate the marriage. Just let me sleep alone, because the cousin's death has upset her. We haven't mentioned that this castle, which of course is stunning, has very strange skull shrines everywhere. And like weird dolls and things that are not cute. They're really creepy.
It just looks like a random collector. You know, when you go to somebody's house who's like very into anthropology or like has gone, traveled the world and then just come home with like weird ass shit. It's like that kind of house, you know?
My parents have some masks that are, I don't like at all in their house.
Yeah, because you're like, they're cursed. You're like, why did you bring these? They're from somebody's gravesite probably. Like, parents, why did you bring this home? But it's probably some gift your dad got like at NPR or something. You know what I mean? Though, like somebody came in and was like, hey.
Yeah.
Or like when also, you guys want, like, you guys traveled the world too. So you probably got some stuff along the way, right?
Yeah. And they think it's great. And I go, I've seen too many horror movies. I think the problem is that I look at those and I go, no, there's something.
Don't bring in
that
the weird doll, because that doll's like a weird fertility thing. Or don't bring in that thing, because it's a weird mask that's going to get stuck on your face. Like, be careful. Don't use
horror
it.
Horror movie survival guy tip. If you see a creepy mask, don't put it up to your face, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would just like to mention that the nudity in this movie, if you're looking for a lesbian vampire with nudity, this is your film. I mean, everyone. And of course, they're all incredibly gorgeous and just naked the whole time. And you go, yay!
It's the French of it all. I feel like I remember like going when we, Julie, when we met, and I remember going to France a bunch when we were in England and going over and watching French TV on like Sunday night and being like, wow, do they just all get naked? And it was like, yeah. Because like they don't care about nudity the same way we do in America. It's just like people are naked sometimes. So they're going
in
for
commercials,
it.
The whole bit.
Just
they don't
randomly. Just don't randomly. Even
care. I love it.
Yeah. Because they're just like, your TV's too violent. I'm like, and we're like, yours is too sexy. But I'm like, yeah, I'd rather have sexy than too violent. So yay, France.
For sure.
Vive la France.
So we meet our Isolde, who is our played by Dominique, with one name only, who is our lead vampire lady, who. This is her entrances. Every single entrance in this movie is outstanding. The first one is she comes out of a fucking grandfather clock, just all chill like. I'm like, how long have you been in there?
And naked.
Naked and completely hypnotizes Ilse, our main lady, who's said, played by Sandra Julian. It hypnotizes immediately.
And it's just and like at the strike of midnight, it's like mm-hmm. ding, ding. Basically, you're getting like, so it's a beautiful like sound cue you're getting with her as she emerges out of the grandfather clock. But she's also groovy because it's 70s. So mm-hmm. it's like, I feel like a very like, you know, remember Laugh-In, like how they would come in and out and like do like yeah. weird little things popping in and out. That's what it felt like to me. I was like, wait.
I need a Laugh-In Shiver of the Vampires crossover, please. Can we make that happen?
Can you imagine?
Which is suck so it to good. Me.
Dude, you guys can't see me, but I'm giving Julia the sock it to me dance right now. Oh man. Can you imagine like Ruth Buzzy? Like, okay, anyway.
Ruth Buzzy could be in any movie you want. I don't know if I want to see her naked and carrying a candelabra, but
I think it would be hilarious. She would be, that would be like a really fun riff on this. That would be so fun.
There's like no humor in this movie at all. Can we just say that? Like, there's no comic relief. It's just.
Straight. I laughed a bunch. Sorry, but I.
But it's not supposed to be funny.
No, it's not. But it really sometimes is, which is great. And that was one of those moments where I was like, "What the fuck? Okay, amazing."
Yes. And so she comes out, hypnotizes her. They caresses her a little bit. They
says,
takes her
"I'm your friend." Yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna take you out to the cemetery. We're gonna do a little kissy kissy in the cemetery. We're gonna drink mm-hmm. some questionable things from some goblets.
Yeah, and the candle girls meet them, and they're standing there beautifully in their gauzy outfits, out there with their candelabras, while they're out in the cemetery making out.
And then maybe she'll just bite her a little bit because that's kind
just of a little taste,
just little a little taste, bit.
Little. Little.
But and when so Antoine goes to look for Ilse, sees that she is gone, follows the servants and finds some questionable things. So he knows something's up.
Yeah, he sees like, you know, some ceremonies and stuff like that. He's, you know, wanders the castle. Basically, he like goes to her room and sees, you know, that she's not there and freaks out because he's clearly like just wanting to hook up with his bride. Like, that's the thing. He was like, you could tell he like it was like a blue ball wake up. Like, he was just like, gotta find her.
Yeah, well, it's his fucking honeymoon, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if we're assuming that we're living, it's the 70s, but if we're assuming you're living in the world where they have not consummated at all, like yeah. this would be. But it's also the 70s in France, so I find that hard to believe. But, you know, I don't know.
She's a good girl, and she's like, they have not yet, so they haven't sealed the deal in this wedding. You see that the cousins are, you know, out and about too, and there's some ceremony that they're happening. And, he thinks that his bride is there, but she's not. He, you know, sees like a vamp getting staked through the heart, and the cousins are watching, and the servant girls are there. But he goes back to her room, and she's actually in her room. His wife Isla is in her room, and she's okay. She looks like a beautiful angel, and he caresses her a little bit, and he's like, "Okay, she's okay." And he goes back to sleep, basically.
They find mm-hmm. there's a very questionable thing. The servants, who we haven't mentioned, are lovers as well, by the way. We have this scene of Antoine in this gorgeous library, because he thinks that the cousins are there, and he gets attacked by some books, and it's so delightful because
this
I just
one
think
made
about,
me laugh so hard, and it was so cute.
It was, because I just think about the PAs behind the shelves just going just pushing these books off
and shaking them.
Standing yeah, that's what I
shaking
think about.
The practical effects of it all. So yeah, he gets attacked by library, which is just beautiful. I was like, I've never seen that really quite like that. I was like, he got booked. They served the book. Well, I was trying to get some puns. I did not
threw the book at him.
Yeah, they threw the book at him. yeah, he got booked. And so he ends up, you know, stumbling back to his room, and he's just not okay. And yeah,
but the cousins
are dangerous. Mm-hmm.
The cousins have arrived. The cousins are delightful. Michel Delay and Jacques Rubiels, who are giving these performances, are confusing but very, very delightful. I really enjoyed watching them because, like, they're on a whole different level in this movie. I'm like, I don't know what movie they're in. I'm not sure they're in this one, but I really like it.
Encapsulated this movie: confusing but also very delightful.
It is.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
But totally. If you're an art house, you know, French 70s lesbian vampire movie, you don't have to have a plot line, right? You don't have to go straightforward. You go all over the fucking place. It just doesn't matter. It's a lot of it is just about the aesthetics of it, right? And so the cousins are there. They have a nice dinner. They're talking about vampires. No, they're not eating. And they're just talking about vampires and, like, how unbelievable they are. But these days, everything's unbelievable. You go, that's good. Uh-huh. That's a good point. They go on a very long rant about how they were researching the origin of their roots and where did they come from. And they were worshippers of ISIS. But then they got into Black Mass and it all kind of goes from there. And you're like, okay, you're just delving deeper into, like, darker and darker and darker.
Well, they were
religions.
Like, Virgin Mary is, like, basically the Christian version of ISIS. And so they were just talking about, like, the parallels and how, like, the things have crossed over, which is all actually based in, like, truth of, like, mythology, stuff like that, if you go back and do your more of your research on that. And so, Antoine is an electronics engineer. So you get that. You see the juxtaposition here of man of science versus men of dark religion, kind of butting heads here. And basically Antoine's, like, listening to these guys rattle on about this. And he's just like, nah, not buying it. No. And he wants to get the hell out of there pretty swiftly after he's hearing how crazy they are. And that his bride is still not wanting to hook up with him. So it's just getting a little difficult. But we also get a beautiful double boob reveal during this, like, sequence. That's super fun that these guys do with their servants.
Isolde comes in again with one of her fantastic entrances. This one made me gasp. So good. She is revealed to have been hiding in the curtains of Ilse's bed and comes, like, throws the curtain back, and there's a thunderclap sound effect that's outstanding. And I was like, oh,
Grace,
well done, guys. Well done.
Ilse goes, like, to the closet first, like, to look for her, because she's like, oh, maybe she'll come out of the clock again, because that was awesome, and she's not there. And she's like, womp, womp, goes to her bed and, like, wait, like, oh, she didn't come out of the clock again. And then all of a sudden she's right there with that clap. And that's, like, the best.
Yeah, that was I hope that if and when I become a vampire that my specialty is fantastic entrances with great sound effects. I feel like that would be a good superpower.
Yeah, it would be pretty fabulous. Like, she's, like, come out of a well. She's, you know, now she's, like, come out of a clock. Now she's come out of the curtains. She's going to come out of a couple more places, which is so hot. But the bride insists on being alone again that night, of course. That's how she makes that happen. She's like, I want to be alone for her and ready for her.
To get nibbled just a little bit. A little bit more. Isabel, who is the widow to both of the cousins, is drawn to the castle. And she doesn't know why. And Isolde confronts her, and this kill might be one of my, like, top five favorite kills I've ever seen, where Isolde has metal spikes on her nipples that she pulls Isabel towards her, which then impales her through her nipples and kills her. And I was like, that's fucking creativity right there.
But
well,
we don't see it
done
right away because Isolde is wearing, like, a cloak around her. So when she does it, it's through her clothes. And then when she reveals and throws off the cloak and the lady's laying on the floor, then you see how deadly she was the whole time. And it's so awesome. And she looks like such a, like, warrior princess. But Isabel also, like, shares the story of, you know, basically that the cousins were vampire hunters. And then they got turned into vampires while they were hunting, basically. And so Isolde basically is like, she would never be loyal because she was so obsessed with them being vampire hunters, that she would never be loyal to them as vampires. So that's why she had to get rid of her.
So, but she says, Isolde says she appreciates her position as a wandering vampires, and calls the cousins bourgeois vampires, which they completely are. So, but Isolde says both of her parents were vampires. So she's come, she's like the true.
She's like a super vampire because of that.
Super vampire. That I feel like that's something that's not been explored enough is what if vampires have vampire babies? Let's not talk about Twilight because Bella was human when she got pregnant. So it's like a human vampire cross. I'm talking about vampire vampire.
Not even that. She's a shield. So that's a whole nother technicality.
That's true. but like vampire, you normally would think that they're sterile and like can't have children. But I feel like this is something that could be explored.
Right. Or were they? And I'd also don't know if like they had her naturally or if that was like after they all got turned at the same time and they were a full family. So who knows the whole genealogy, but, you know, vibes. So the groom is alone again and. He he's kind of just lost in the castle basically, but the candle girls go to wake him up, the next day. They're like, oh, we need to wake him up. They're like, how? Let's just get in the bed with him. And so they give him a little like morning, good wake up. And,
you're waking up with two naked girls on either side of you giggling and touching you. That's a pretty good way to wake up, I would say.
So he follows them down to meet the cousins. This basically was the ruse to get him out to go see them. And it's like a whole crazy scene happening that he encounters. And the groom does not want to be there anymore. And he is ready to go once he also grabs his gun on the way to follow them.
Everyone is in the cemetery. And so he wants to leave. They won't. And once they hear his gun, he's trying to get through a door to get to them. They all scatter. And so she says she won't leave. But now it's starting to get weird. The sunlight's starting to hurt her eyes. He's noticing that she's acting different.
She's changed. Not the girl. She's distant, lost.
Yes,
you're not the
girl,
same,
you know, because they've only been here a few days, one would think. And he mentions in the very beginning that they have plans in Italy. So I don't know how many days they were supposed to spend here. And like, that's part of why he's like, hey, we have plans kind of thing. Also, everyone's terrifying. His car has been fucked with and he can't get out because they've ruined his car. So he's now stranded. And we know from the beginning when we saw them driving in that they're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
100% in the middle of nowhere down a country road at a big old castle over at the Frankenstein place. Okay. So he's, you know, trying to get out of there and he, you know, tells her like, hey, I would like to leave. And she's like, actually just get me some sunglasses, you know, like let's, you know, I need to sleep. I'll be fine at night. I need to sleep today. Like it's so all these things that you're like, she's turning. And so it does get to a turning point. She is, finds a bird like in the, as they're out for a walk and as he goes to go get sunglasses for her, they find this like dead dove, but she wants to drink it. So now she's got a taste for blood. She's, the light's hurting her and she wants to sleep all night. So when she sends her husband or fresh groom away, to go, you know, get her sunglasses, she takes the dove over to Isolde's coffin.
They have a really nice conversation through the coffin, which is unusual for a vampire. But she says the smell of blood woke her up, even though she's in the day. Let me just point out this scene where the coffin is sitting in broad daylight. And I don't know if it's sitting in broad daylight because this was Isolde's plan. Mm-hmm. But she gives the power to Ilse and she's like, okay, I can tell that you kind of want to open this coffin because, you know, if I die, this curse will be lifted. So it's up to you, like, what you're going to do. And she decides to not do it. So she wants
she
to
says,
let
I
her live.
I can feel you hesitating. Mm-hmm. I can feel it through the coffin. And, you know, it's, yeah.
So now we know she's in. She likes
she
it.
Walks she walks away. Yeah.
Wants to be a vampire. I don't blame her. So now the servants prep a glass of the blood when they... So the servants have been going to the cemetery every night when everybody wakes up, and they put blankets over all the crosses so they don't have to worry about that. And they cut themselves and fill a goblet with blood. So they have a nice thing like a fresh cup of coffee when you wake
aperitif.
Up, you know?
Yes.
Just you know. A mixed coffin of blood. That's all.
So next we get another wonderful reveal from our lovely Isolde. She comes out of the chimney this time, like Santa, but
and
really
does
slow.
Like a weird dance. It reminds me of the guy from Horrors of Malformed Men, that crazy dance he's doing on the rocks.
My boyfriend? I love him. so hot.
I love that you love him because he's so creepy.
He's so hot.
You're amazing.
I'm such a weirdo. Okay. So, but it's such a fun little chimney moment. Mon ami, and she's telling her love at this point, and they're just, you know, it's like since she's in now, Isolde is also in, like, you know, more so. It feels like you can feel the connection even more so now between the two. They have dinner again, and the table is now only set for one because she's not drinking now either. But Anton is the only one left to have food set out for him. And he notices.
This is when he's like, finally got it. Like, it's taken him this whole movie, and finally he's like, ah, aha, okay. When they were talking about vampires, they weren't fucking around. Like, this is a real thing. And I can tell, you know, as an electronics engineer, it would take a while for you to like fully believe, right? So I believe that. But he decides at dinner, he's going to pull a crucifix, and all hell breaks loose. So they end up tying him up. And now they're going to let him watch. It's now time for the initiation. And he's struggling on the floor. Now he sees that his girlfriend, his wife, his new bride has chosen the dark side and wants to leave him behind.
Yep, it's the final kiss, the bite to join the family. But he tries to steal her away. And it's like a full-on chase. And the cock crows. And so, you know, it's going to be almost morning. So they got to get this shit done, because they can't be out there in the morning. Isolde runs into the crypt, and she knows she there as things get awry, and you see that the coffins that were down are now burning, and it's like, oh, she doesn't have a coffin anymore, it looks like. And she gets locked inside the crypt by the servants, and she looks like she's drinking her own blood down there, and the candle girls will not let her out. And Antoine is followed by the cousins. And they are running with, he's carries Isla off to the sea.
Let me just back up just a little bit, because sure. I think this is the first. So the servants are now, we have the Renfields who have now crossed mm-hmm. their master, and now are have won, right? Because they've essentially killed their master. And also, I don't think I've ever seen a vampire drink their own blood and then die because of it.
Never, because usually they drink it to like gain some sort of strength or like help themselves, but like it was like she's like, the sun is coming, my coffin is gone, I'm pretty much done, this is it, and I'm locked down here in this crypt, but the sunlight's gonna come soon because the cock has already crowed. She was like, okay, I guess this is it, I concede defeat. But I don't think I felt like they were still Renfields more for the cousins, and the cousins had set their plan earlier. They were like, basically, this is what is in place, we have to end this madness. This is how we do it. And I thought that they were just completing the mission.
How we do it.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. From the beginning. Right. And so they were like, okay, I guess we have to do it now. So
now we have the end scene on the beach with Antoine carrying his bride and the shooting at the cousins. It's a very bad shot. And Ilsa tells, they said, I'm going to go with my cousins. I want to be with them. I don't want to be with you. And then they have a little like weird frolic on the beach a little bit, like they're all laying down on top of each other. And I'm like, I don't know.
And then
what's
they just get her naked. It's like a weird kiss and cousins moment. And you're like, okay, weird vampire shit. Okay. Then it's all of a sudden strangely incestuous. But then the sunlight comes, and I was like, oh, it was like a series of events where I was like, oh, Antoine might win. And I was like, no, he doesn't win because he asked her. And then it's like, oh, the family wins. Oh, they don't really either, because the sun wins.
Sun wins, burns them, and then they all disappear. And poor Antoine's like stumbling on the beach, going mad. He's never going to be the same again. He's our final boy, but he's cracked. He's twanged. We know this. So he and really a final boy, kind of by accident, right? Like he tried to kill them multiple times and just couldn't hit them. So it wasn't like his actions saved anybody.
Also, who knows if he had the right bullets, and he made way too many shots for that little gun.
Suspend his belief.
I know, but I was just like, you've been out of shots, dude. You shot the door. I didn't see you reload.
I was like, why? Stop wasting bullets on the door. What are you doing? Amateur
hour.
Because
he could see through the little window, like that they were about to like sacrifice her, it looked like. So I get it. But yeah, he was not very good at the shooting. See, the French, good at being sexy and naked, but not very good at the shooting.
So let's gore factor it up. We have one is not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. 2 is a puddle of blood. 3 is enough blood to gross out the average viewer. 4 is a bathtub of blood. And 5 is run for the barf bag. We give this one a 3 for gore. You good to get, you know, it's a vampire movie. You're going to get a little bit of blood. But really, it's those nipple spikes. It's well done.
Death by
really
nipple spikes. Impressed. Fantastic. Fantastic. You guys got to watch that. Just, I mean, it's so very cool.
That's worth the price of admission alone.
Fully, fully. Chainsaws, one if you're desperate, 2 barely qualifies as a horror film, 3 seen worse, seen better, 4 not too shabby, 5 fantastical. I give this a 5. I freaking love this movie. It was so weird and wonderful. They had me from the beginning as well, Julia, from the weird like black and white sequence into color, and then the groovy music, and then you got nipple death. Hello.
Yeah, I give this one a 5 as well, because it gives you everything you want in a lesbian vampire movie. It gives you a really good amount of lesbianism. It gives you a stunning amount of nudity, and also it's just groovetastic the whole way through, from the soundtrack to the costumes. It's lesbian vampire thumbs up,
all vibes. Love it.
So we will of course be continuing Lesbian Vampire Round, so if you want more, we gotcha. And also, you know where to find us. We're online in all the places. Talk to us, we'll talk to you. That's how
Facebook,
it works.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're there hanging out. And on the Patreon, people message us there, and I love that. Shoot us a message there, join it, and get some merch at our Teespring store. We love you so much. Have a wonderful week.
Yes, if you're feeling generous, give us a rating on wherever you listen as well. We hope that your week is full of delight, sunshine, maybe some naughtiness.
Yeah.
Maybe some vampires, you know?
Yeah. All of it. All right. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.